question. Thank you. All right. Hello, everyone. Thank you again for being here. My name is Melissa Jackson, and I am the policy analyst and also a laboratory assessor with the Oregon Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program, also known as ORLAP. Today is Wednesday, August 19th, 2026, and this is the second Rules Advisory Committee meeting, or RAC, for cannabis and the first Rules Advisory Committee meeting for psilocybin testing changes. Today's meeting will cover Division 64. This RAC is being held in coordination with Oregon's Medical Marijuana Program, also a part of the Oregon Health Authority. There was another RAC yesterday, August 18th, for changes to Division 7, which covered proposed changes to testing rules for cannabis. Just as a heads up, if we are not able to get into everything today in Division 64, we will have a third RAC on Friday, August 21st, from 10 a.m. to noon. And that would cover mostly psilocybin. We're going to go through the cannabis rules first and then psilocybin after. The meeting materials for this meeting and others may be found on ORLAP's Rules and Statute website, which may be found at www.healthoregon.org/ORLAP, and selecting Rules and Statutes from the left sidebar. The rules, as mentioned yesterday, are also on the OMMP website. This meeting is being held over Zoom and is being recorded. The recording will be posted on the ORLAP Rules website. Please, to cut down on background noise, everyone should place yourselves on mute when not speaking. That includes everyone calling in. Please remember to mute your phones. The public is invited to listen to the RAC meetings, but only RAC members may be involved in the discussion of the proposed rule changes during the RAC meetings. The public will be able to provide comments on a final proposed rule draft at a later time. That information will be posted on ORLAP's and OMMP's rule pages. The purpose of the RAC is to increase the public's involvement in the development of administrative rules. RAC meetings are a way to solicit input from internal and external stakeholders who are likely to be impacted by the development or amendment of agency policy rules. RAC invites may include those impacted by the rules, such as OMMP registrants, Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission, or OLCC licensees, Oregon Psilocybin Services, or OPS licensees, cannabis and psilocybin industry associations, members of the public, partner agencies, or other interested stakeholders. The reason for having all of these members on this committee today is to hear from different communities that may be impacted by the rules. The RAC's role is advisory only, and consensus is not necessary, but the RAC's input will be considered for possible integration into the rules, into the final rules. RAC members are encouraged to communicate information or concerns to me or Margaret from OMMP. So if you have anything that you would like to say to us afterwards, feel free to reach out. As an overview, the OHA is responsible for cannabis and psilocybin testing rules that apply both to medical for cannabis and retail market. Any marijuana item intended to be sold at a dispensary or a retail shop must have been sampled and tested according to the testing rules found in Division 7 and 64. And any psilocybin product must have been sampled and tested according to the testing rules found in Division 333 and Division 64. In today's RAC meeting, proposed changes to cannabis and psilocybin testing rules found in Division 64, also the associated Exhibit C, Table 1, and Exhibit D, Table 1, and the Statement of Need, Fiscal Impact Statement, and Racial Equity Statement will be reviewed. As we go through this today, I will review the changes in each section and ask for feedback from the RAC. Please use the raise hand function to be called upon before speaking. Before you begin speaking, please state your name for the record. The RAC should provide meaningful feedback on proposed changes and the impact the change may have on you, your business, or processes, any fiscal impact, equity impact, or time it may take to implement a change. Please be aware that the chat box is only available to send messages to hosts. We will read applicable comments out loud to the rest of the committee. Please be reminded that all comments in the chat box are public record. We ask that everyone be respectful to everyone on the committee today. And as a reminder, this is a forum to discuss proposed rule changes. The RAC meeting is not a time to introduce new topics that are not related to the proposed changes. If these changes get adopted, they would be effective January 1st, 2027. So any time frames that should be considered for implementation should be brought forward and discussed. If a fiscal or racial equity impact is identified for a particular section as we are reviewing it, please feel free to bring that up while we're reviewing that section. You don't have to wait till the end. You can bring it up at the end as well, but if you want to mention that while we're going over that section, please do. And the fiscal and racial equity impacts may also be stated at the end, or you can also send us an email afterwards as well. We will take a 10 or 15-minute break around the halfway point. This meeting is scheduled to go till 5 today, so if we may take that break around 3 p.m. And to start us off, I'm going to do a roll call so we know who is here today. So when I call your name, please indicate you are here and who you represent. So the first name I have is Jay Kirkwood, and I did get an email that he may not be able to make it, but Jay, if you're here, please let us know. Okay. The next name is Chris Griffey.
Hi, Chris Griffey. I represent Grocery Labs as the lab director.
Great, thank you. Megan Anderson.
Hi, Megan Anderson here, and I'm representing Pinnacle Analytics.
Thank you. Jeremy Sackett.
Hi, Jeremy Sackett, present representing Columbia Laboratories.
And Patrick Trujillo.
Hey everyone, Patrick Trujillo here, representing Chem History. I'm the lab director here. Thanks.
Thank you. And Justin Miller.
Hi, Justin Miller, and I'm representing SC Labs.
Thank you. Daniel Hewson.
Daniel Hewson, representing Rose City Laboratories.
Thank you. And Richard Holston.
Richard, representing Reference Labs.
Thank you. And Erin Purchase.
Erin Purchase, managing member, Kindly Pendleton.
Thank you. And Melissa Wolf. Melissa Wolf. All right. And I am working with one screen today, so I can't see the participants as easily as I could yesterday. So, Melissa, if you're here, let us know. Otherwise, we'll move on. Suzanne Silva.
Hi, Suzanne Silva, representing Farmer's Friend Extracts.
Thank you. April Roth.
Hi, April Roth, representing Grown Rogue.
Perfect. Thank you. Alexander Marucci.
Hey guys, Alex Marucci, representing Higher Cultures and Good Gardens.
Thank you. Tucker Holland.
Hi, Tucker Holland. I'm with Entourage Cannabis Processor.
Thank you. Mia Nelson.
Mia Nelson, owner and general manager of Capricorn.
Thank you. And Sienna Oren Walker.
Hello, Sienna Oren Walker, representing IBIM, where culture meets therapy. We are a mental health consulting firm.
Thank you. And Michael Rhodes. Michael Rhodes, are you here? Okay, we'll move on. But Michael Rhodes, if you're here, just chime in and let us know. Patricia Butcher. Patricia Butcher. Okay. How about Anthony Taylor?
Thank you, Melissa. Anthony Taylor, Chair, Oregon Cannabis Commission, here to listen and learn.
Thank you. David Viancourt. Okay. And Cheryl Johnson. Okay, so not hearing Cheryl Johnson. So those were the last. That was all of the public members of the public RAC committee members. We do have several state agency members on the line, so I'll go ahead and call those out as well. The first is Margaret Flershinger.
Hi, everybody. Margaret Flershinger, Oregon Health Authority Medical Marijuana Program Policy Analyst. Thanks, Melissa.
And David Standiford.
Howdy, I'm with the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission.
Thank you. And Dr. Sarah Volker.
Yes, hi, I'm Sarah Volker, with the ODA, Laboratory Services.
Thank you. And Jesse Sweet.
Good afternoon, I'm Jesse Sweet. I use he, him pronouns. I'm with Oregon Psilocybin Services section at OHA, and I'm a policy analyst.
Perfect, thank you. And Steve Jetter.
Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. My name is Steve Jetter. I'm the program manager of ORLAP and the manager of the regulatory section at Oregon State Public Health Laboratory. Thanks all for being here.
Thank you. And if is there any other state agency members that would like to announce themselves? Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. We really appreciate you being here today. As I said, yesterday was the Division 7 RAC, and I believe there were some questions yesterday that some of the other state agency members may have some follow-up on that they might want to speak to before we get into Division 64. So, Margaret or David, if you would like to, I guess we'll start with Margaret. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Melissa. So we're just going to go back to one section in Division 7. It was a comment brought up yesterday by Alex. Sorry, Alex, I will ask you to kind of go over what you had proposed or suggested yesterday. And this is in regards to Section 333. Let me do screen share too. 333-007-0430. Getting there with the screen share. And we're
While Margaret's doing that, Melissa, this is Erin Williams from DOJ, and I'm here too.
Thank you, Erin.
All right, so here we are in Division 7, Section 0430, Standards for Adult Use Cannabinoid and CBD Compliance Testing. The specific comment that Alex made had to do with subsection 3, which starts by stating, notwithstanding subsection 2A of this rule, which basically goes into items meeting RPD RSD requirements. And the comment was made specifically for botanical infused extract distillates and wanting to increase the amount of possible milligrams of total CBD where an item would not fail testing based on the exceedance of RPD or RSD. So I just wanted to bring that comment forward. Alex and I had a back and forth email about this after the RAC. He indicated a fiscal impact of not meeting this if an item does fail, and just wanted to bring it forward to see if there's any comments or feedback from the RAC members regarding this. Whether a rule change will happen right away is unknown, but we do want to take into consideration any comments that are made. And also for this particular section E that I keep pointing to, but I don't think stated, it's for cannabinoid concentrates, extracts, finished inhalable cannabinoid products, or industrial hemp-derived vapor items. So when we do talk about these limits for not exceeding RPD, if something is below a certain threshold for CBD, in this case, we do also need to take into account CBD dominant products or those industrial hemp-derived vapor items that might have more CBD. So this might be a bigger rule change than just saying, well, let's increase this number or let's change RPD or RSD. There's other factors to be taken into account as well. So I did want to put that out there. Alex, I'm not sure, do you want to speak to this at all?
I've never failed for RPD on THC. I've had, I believe, three failures in the past couple years. Economic impact close to $100,000 of just batches that didn't make the market. I gave an example on March 4th. I had a test fail. The primary tested at 1.96 percent CBD, the duplicate at 1.54 percent CBD. I believe the difference in those two scores is extremely ne negligible given the nature of CBD's effects on us. It's not psychoactive. The consumer, is not going to get more or less high from those two numbers. It's just like that's a very small, it's a 0.4% variation there, but because the starting number is so low, we failed as the RPD was roughly 22%. Just seems like that's something that I've dealt with a handful of times. And if we could increase that to 100 milligrams, like a 10% threshold, even a 5% threshold, I think is fair. If 10 is too much of an ask. But increasing that number to 50 or 100 milligrams would, I think, would be a little bit more fair for us, given the nature of CBD. I'm by no means asking to change the RPD numbers or, affect any change to THC. I understand the intention there. I just think this is a bit of a gap for us. And has cost us some money. So,
Okay, thank you for that. I see a couple hand raised. So I think Tucker, you were next.
yeah, I would just like to jump in with there on Alex as another processor in the industry. We've had issues with lower levels of CBD as well, and that there has been a financial impact for us as well. So second, his request to have something done here. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And then Patrick, you're up next.
Yeah, thanks. I will say that I have had quite a number of clients basically reach out about this for having those small amounts of CBD. So I'd be in favor of, maybe looking at this, basically going up to maybe 50 milligrams, like Alex was saying. Just because, I said we're working with primarily THC products here, and the amount of CBD for 50 milligrams even in 1,000 milligrams is pretty much negligible. So, anyways.
Okay, thank you. And Jeremy?
Yes, thank you. I would also support this change. I think it would be a beneficial change, maybe more complex than just changing some numbers. And just to put it out there, and I'm not sure how it would fit in, and it may require some maybe more complicated than necessary, but it could incorporate the measurement uncertainty at the laboratory, depending on what the values are for the measurement uncertainty of the test method. That may come into consideration as well, depending on what the test results were. That example that was shared seems like those values are quite close. And maybe utilizing measurement uncertainty at the laboratory would be helpful. and sorting this out. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anybody else have comments on this section? All right, not seeing any other hand raises. So this is something that we can take into consideration. We will look into it a little bit more. We'll look at some fail rates in metric and see what that looks like. Obviously, with rules, items will fail. We can't write rules to say that no items will fail. We do need to look at the why do we have this rule and the need for this rule, and then obviously any other impacts, fiscal, that this may have. So we will take that into consideration and see what happens.
You guys,
And
I appreciate you considering it.
yeah, no problem. And that is all I really had to discuss. I know I had spoken to David at OLCC earlier today, and he said he had some updates regarding metric and some of the questions that were asked around Division 7 yesterday. So I will actually turn it over to David to give those metric updates.
Sure. So there were two rules we discussed where the question of how that would work in metric came up, and I did talk to our team, and I think we have some good ideas on how they would work, and I just kind of wanted to briefly explain it verbally. Certainly, if the rules were to pass, we would write this up into the guide with pretty pictures and diagrams that explain all of this. So don't get too stressed if you aren't quite following, but this is generally how I imagine we would have it work. So regarding target potency, what we could have done is when a target is out, or when a potency is outside of target, we would just give that a test name. Like outside of target potency, something like that. And it would act like an R&D test. So it's not a pass fail. It's just kind of an information only status that would get entered in. And then that would let the lab know that, okay, now we're going to do our reanalysis if they request it. Okay, boom. So it shouldn't mess with the test status of the product. If the licensee just wants to relabel it and give it a new pack, give it new packaging, they can do that. The test status should remain. If the licensee wants to do the reanalysis and then have another lab come out and resample and retest if that first reanalysis passes and is in the target range, then they'll just do sample test, enter that potency result. And that way, it's very clear to the OLCC or to another licensee when they look at the test results, kind of what happened, which is here's a series of passing tests. We see an outside of target potency test added, and then we see two more potency results. So we can see that reanalysis chain there. And you would just always use the most recent top level potency test result as what would be the label. Any questions about that part? Okay. The next one was how to deal with failures of potency when a single increment is, exceeds the potency limit. And I'm thinking kind of the same situation there, but we would just add a new test result or a new test type that's just, single increment or whatever we want to name it, increment outside of the allowable potency concentration. We'll think of a shorter name. And so that would be a pass fail test. And so just like thinking when you fail for a pesticide, that analyte gets entered. So a subtest of potency would be this single increment exceeds concentration limit that would get added. That would be marked as a fail. Potency would be marked as a fail. So the THC is still reported as an average, just like is required in Division 64, but we would have this new test type that gets added that would identify the failure. So that's our solutions to that. Okay, that's all I wanted to explain.
Thank
Great.
you, Jay.
All right. Thank you, Margaret and David, and thanks for those questions for everybody. With that, we'll get into Division 64. All right. Can everyone see my screen? Okay. All right, so we are going to be starting with 333-064-0025. This is the definition section. The first change that we have is kind of just editorial. So for cannabis sampling, we're changing the term batch to have the same term as basically just to say this term has the same meaning given in 333-007-0310. And we didn't change the term at all. It's just this lines up with how it is in other sections. You can see in psilocybin sampling, it says the same thing there. So instead of having that definition in two places, we just are referring to Division 7 for that term to match up with how other definitions have been described in the rules. The next change is adding a definition for cannabinoid product, and it's going to have the meaning given that term in 333 Division 7. And I have that definition here. Again, not changing that definition at all, just adding this definition to Division 64. And then that did start a new numbering. So you see there's new numbering going down here as well. So the next change is to the change of the definition of homogenization. So we made the change. So homogenization means physically manipulating a sample to make the sample's material uniform in composition and properties throughout, and reducing particle size to a uniform material for biological tissue and solid matrices, or combining all layers or phases of a liquid or semi-solid sample into a uniform substance. So we kind of took out that including but not limited to indicate that the homogenization really means reducing the particle size to a uniform material. And we'll talk more about that in the testing section as well. Any comments on that? Okay. We've added two new definitions. These are related to proficiency testing, and we'll talk a little bit more about this as well. But the two new definitions are ISO/IEC, which stands for International Organization for Standardization, and the International Electrochemical Commission. These are standards that they write a lot of standards for all different kinds of things. And one of the standards that they write is ISO IEC 17043, which is a general requirement for proficiency testing. And part of what we're going to be doing in this RAC is expanding the allowable types of proficiency testing that psilocybin and cannabis fields of accreditation may use. In the past, this was limited to only T&I standard approved PT providers. However, there are other options out there for cannabis and psilocybin, and we want to expand those options for labs. And we'll get into that more because we're also changing the definition of proficiency testing. And there is a link if you'd like to purchase that standard of where you can purchase it. So this next section is where we are updating the definition of proficiency testing. So it's going to now say proficiency testing or PT means for all fields of accreditation except as outlined in subsection B, the analysis of samples obtained for providers that meet the TNI standards for PT providers. And so now we have this except as for cannabis and psilocybin field of accreditation means the analysis of samples obtained from an ORLAP approved ISO slash IEC 17043 accredited PT provider or a PT sample made by the Oregon Department of Agriculture Cannabis Reference Laboratory. So I do want to be clear because we do have a couple labs here on and in the rack and also who may be listening that this change does not impact our environmental laboratories or environmental fields of accreditation. Those types of testing will still need to use PT providers that meet TNI standards for PT providers. So those still need to be TNI approved PT providers. This is only a change for cannabis and psilocybin fields of accreditation. And I also want to point out that this is not going to change the in-matrix requirement for pesticides, potency, and mycotoxins in biological tissue. So that will still need to be done by an in-state, in-matrix PT provider. It does leave the door open, though, if in the future a 17043 PT provider wants to also offer that, we'd be open to that. But we're not changing that in-matrix. This is for the rest of the testing. And is there any feedback or input on this? Yes, Daniel.
Hey there, I just wanted to touch bases. Yes, Daniel, Rose City Laboratories. I'm thankful that you mentioned that it had to be in matrix PT type scenarios because there's only one for psilocybin right now, and it's not in matrix. It's button mushrooms, and I think we all know how that worked for the cannabis industry when we started not being in matrix. But anyway, I just that was my concern over all of this, is just making sure that it's a legit PT or something that's in Matrix. Thanks.
Thank you, Daniel. Yeah, and at this time, we still actually don't have a PT requirement for psilocybin, and partly is because of what you stated. There's only one provider. It's not really in matrix, but this is written in case in the future we will add that. We just want to change that definition now. I also want to say, like, at this time, the Department of Agriculture Cannabis Reference Laboratory is not yet to the point of making PT samples, but it's in statute that they can someday. So we're just making that change now, in anticipation that that will happen in the future. All right. Any other comments? And Dan, did you still want to have your hand up there? Jesse, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just add very briefly. Thank you for that clarification. You answered my question before I had an opportunity to ask it.
Great. Okay, this is a big change, but it puts Oregon in line with what other states are requiring for PTs, and we hope it opens up more options for labs on PT providers. So the next one is adding a definition for target potency. Again, this is not a new definition. We're just adding this definition from OAR 845-025-7000. And it's, we talked about target potency yesterday. It'll come up a little bit again in Division 64. And we're just making sure that definition of target potency is clear in these rules. All right, and then the next change is for psilocybin. I am going to go over this now. We'll touch on it again when we talk about psilocybin. Oh, go ahead, Tucker.
Sorry, this might back us up just a little bit, but I'm there's a lot. But it looks like if Oregon and OHA is going to start requiring the ISO IEC standardization, where are we with allowing licensees even of low THC products to use any lab that is accredited with that association, even if that's an out-of-state lab?
So thanks for your question. So just to be clear, the TNI PT providers are also ISO IEC. So the th we right now there's three TNI PT providers for cannabis PTs, and they also have that IO they also have that 17043 accreditation. So this is just adding more. But for your specific question about out of state, low potency things, the rules here are written for in-state cannabis testing. So that it this is not really written for those questions. And that might be more of a question for the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Thank you.
Okay. So for our changes for psilocybin, Psilocybin Services had a work group around this, and this change is in coordination with Oregon Psilocybin Services. We are changing the definition of total potential psilocin to total psilocybin equivalent, and that will mean the sum of psilocybin analyte concentration and 1.4 times the psilocin analyte concentration. And this number is the maximum theoretical concentration of psilocybin in the sample. And we will talk about this more when we get to the psilocybin section. This is just making sure that definition is clear. All right, and that is the end of the changes to the definition section. Does anyone have any comments before we move on? Great. Okay. All right, this is one of the bigger sections. So this is cannabis sampling procedures and testing. This is 333-064-0100. And it covers sampling and testing. Throughout the document, we're making some just kind of editorial changes. Historically, there used to be this EL. Oh, go ahead, Mia.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off. I can
Oh.
finish your presentation. I was just getting in line for comments.
Okay. Thank you. I'll come back to you. So we'll have TNI, we're removing this EL. It was kind of historic. We're also, before this was called V1M1, we're just spelling out the words volume and module here. And then throughout the document, we're changing, it used to say rev, and now we're just changing it to revision, just for clarity. Here for this section F, it was missing a section, so it used to say OAR. 333-70330 340, and now we're adding 341. I don't think this changes the intent. It was just a clarification there that 341 was also included. Throughout the document, we had this phrase Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission seed to sale system. And we're just shortening that to CTS because that matches what's in our definitions. You're going to see that throughout the document. And then Margaret covered this yesterday, where when the laboratory takes the sample, they need to take for analysis and potential reanalysis. So this is just matching that as well. And then, as Margaret mentioned yesterday, we're changing all shalls to must. Again, doesn't change the meaning. It's just kind of an editorial thing to kind of get in line with the more standardized way of defining those rules. All right. I think this is a good breaking point. Mia, do you want to say your comment here?
Well, you haven't covered the section that I had a concern with,
Okay.
so I was premature raising my hand. Sorry about that.
No problem. Just let me know when you're ready. All right. Any comments about those sections that we just covered? We did a little bit of renumbering here. This first section two of section 100 was getting pretty long, and it sometimes wasn't clear where the sampling portion ended and the sample handling and homogenization sections began. So we just added a new number three here to make it clear that the sampling portion is above and section three and below is after the sample has been collected and you're handling and homogenizing the section, the sample. So now we're getting back to that homogenization section. We are adding some new requirements for how the lab needs to homogenize usable marijuana. And oh, if people could remember to mute themselves. Thank you. So we have three now little A prior to any testing or subsampling, except as described in subparagraph B of this paragraph, the entire sample, combined sample, except as described in subparagraph D of this paragraph, must undergo the laboratory's homogenization process. And so we now have subparagraph A, which is new. It says the laboratory's homogenization process for usable marijuana must make the entire sample uniform to less than 1.0 millimeters. The laboratory must not remove stems, seeds, or leaf material prior to the homogenization process. The laboratory must perform and document an initial validation to demonstrate the laboratory's homogenization process for usable marijuana achieves a sample uniformity of less than 1.0 millimeters. And yes, Patrick, please.
Yeah, thanks. I'd like to suggest maybe 5 millimeters, just because some of the things can get real sticky when they're being stored. Not necessarily right after cryo, but when they're being stored, they can get a little sticky and kind of ball up. Other thing is sometimes those stems can be a little bit pesky too. So I think 1 millimeter might be a little ambitious. 5 millimeters is, in my opinion, still small enough. So I'd like to suggest maybe 5 millimeters instead. But I do like the additional clarity about sample or size and uniformity and whatnot.
All right, thank you for the comment, Patrick. And Mia, go ahead.
Regarding the stem, seeds, and leaf material, I am not sure what all labs do currently, but I have been told by one of my partners that usually large stems get removed before running. And if that's the current practice of labs, I really think that should continue because, fair enough with the leaf material that should have been trimmed off by the trimmers and seeds shouldn't be in there at all. But when people buy whole buds at the dispensary, they fully know that there's a stem in there. And furthermore, they even know like how large the stem is likely to be because as the bigger the bud is, the bigger the stem is. Nobody smokes those. And so I think it's really inappropriate for that to be sampled because that expectation is already part of, what the consumer has when they purchase the product.
Okay, thank you for your comment, Mia. And Tucker?
Yeah, I'd like to echo what Mia said there, but also if we're removing the stem, we could potentially be artificially deflating the testing of the product, or sorry, inflating the testing of the product. And a consumer may think they're getting something that's lower in potency because that stem was included in the testing, and then they get a product that's stronger on in the market once they remove that stem. So I believe the testing should actually mirror kind of what Mia was saying, how the consumer is actually consuming that product. And so we don't want to necessarily be artificially deflating these test results.
Okay, thank you for your comment. And Justin?
I just mostly want to echo what most other people said here. I agree with the stems and the reasonings, and I also agree with the
maybe increasing to 1 millimeter, because that does seem a little small. And like I think Patrick mentioned, it does kind of get sticky or when it's stored. And I guess I was just curious too, where did the 1 millimeter come from? Was that just an arbitrary number, or was that I just kind of curious where that number came from as well.
Yeah, so if in the statement of need and fiscal impact, we have some supporting documents, and I believe one of those supporting documents was sent to the RAC members to just show that. Well, for one, there's an ASTM standard. An ASTM is an organization that writes standards for, again, all different kinds of things, including testing. And their homogenization standard for usable marijuana does specify the 1 millimeter. And then we also shared a study that showed kind of how precision and accuracy changes in relation to homogenization size. And that paper actually concluded that it was 0.5 millimeters that would give the best accuracy and precision, which I believe we felt was a little too low. But it, yeah, so that number did come from some supportive documents, but we do hear you, and we will take what your comments into consideration for the final rule. Anyone else? Jeremy.
Hi, yes, thank you. Jeremy Sackett here. I know this is specific to usable marijuana in this section and maybe down the document further. Does it address other types of products, edible products, or things along those lines with changes to homogenization?
It doesn't. We'd welcome that feedback, but for right now, it's usable marijuana. I could see this being applied to other edibles, solid product types as well. Also, Jeremy, you're a little quiet, so I don't know if you have another comment, if you could turn up a little
I'll
bit.
speak up. Thank you for letting me know.
Thanks. All right, Dan.
Hi, Dan Houston, Rose City. I would love to not homogenize stems and all of that stuff. That it's not consumed, it's not anything. So I agree with the not homogenization of stems. But the leaves and seeds, I mean, the grower can't grow without it, then probably because they may be consumed.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Anyone else? Okay, we'll move on. So the next B that this has not changed, talking about, yeah, so that part has not changed, but subsection C, before it just said potency must not be performed on material subsampled prior to homogenization. We're just clarifying that, pesticides, mycotoxins, solvents, heavy metals would also be things that would not be impacted by the cryogenic sterilization and should be performed on homogenized material. Go ahead, Patrick.
Thanks. Sorry, I realized I had one more comment about sub A.
Okay.
And it's just at the very, very, very end where it says basically we need to have a validation to ensure uniformity. It just says of less than 1 millimeter, but immediately above it says less than or equal to. And I don't want to, I hope to have the same less than or equal to there just to, for clarity and consistency's sake.
That's thank you. Yeah, we'll add that in. That's a good catch. Thank you. All right. And then again, we just have another shall being changed to a must here. Okay. Any other comments? Again, just changing rev to revision, shall to must. This next section here is about, I believe it's been called like composite testing, but basically, when the laboratory goes and takes samples of different strains or different batches, but then those batches are within the same harvest lot and they're allowed to be combined for contaminant testing. This was a section, it basically reiterates what was in an OLCC guidance document, but has never been in rule. That says when you combine the homogenized sample for testing as permitted in Division 7, a proportionally representative amount of material must be withdrawn from each homogenized sample, and then the withdrawn material from each sample must be combined to produce the combined sample, and that when you withdraw that sample, you have to combine it and you have to document how much came out from each sample. So this is kind of just putting something into rule that has been in a guidance document but not been in rule. Okay, any comments on that? Okay. We do have, yeah, again, some more shalls turning into musts. And then another change that we're making throughout the document is changing the word average to mean. Average can have three different meanings. It can mean the mean, which I think is what we all think of when we say average. Then it can also have the median, which is like the middle result. And then it can also have the mode, which is the result that comes up most frequently. And this is just a clarification that by average, we actually meant mean. Okay. Here that we just I added some little parentheses around PCR that had been missing. And here I just added it was added that LOQ just for ease of looking up that if you're looking up limit of quantitation, LOQ is the common acronym for that. Okay, so with LCS, this has been in the rule for a while. We're making one small change that says changing acceptable performance means recovery are within limits to must be within limits, just to make that more clear. And then this was a section here that is new. I'll read through it. So the laboratory control sample or LCS may be made and characterized by the laboratory for potency testing only. The LCS characterization protocol must include at least seven replicates. The laboratory must calculate and document the mean and standard deviation of the replicates. The assigned value of the characterized LCS must be the mean of the replicates. If the characterized LCS fails during routine analysis and the laboratory intends to recharacterize or remake the characterized LCS, the laboratory must perform and document an investigation into the cause of the failure prior to recharacterizing the LCS to demonstrate the LCS failure is not due to laboratory error. And I think what this is saying is like if your LCS is failing, you should look into why it's failing. And not just assume that the material itself is failing, that there may be something else that went wrong. The LCSs are used to determine acceptability of test batches. And the characterization of the LCSs has been something that labs have been doing since the beginning. But we just wanted to put some requirements around that and make sure labs were all had some consistency in that. Yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Yes. You say if the laboratory intends to recharacterize or remake the first part of the sentence and then do the investigation prior to recharacterizing, but not prior to remaking.
We'll add that in too. Yeah, that's a good catch there for
Okay.
consistency. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. So these next sections are also new. And they also relate to Exhibit C, Table 1, which we'll cover at the end here. Actually, maybe we'll cover it now because we're talking about it now. So the new requirement is to run an initial calibration verification, also known as an ICV, for each initial calibration in accordance with TNI standard requirements. An acceptable performance of the ICV means percent recovery for all regulated analytes must be within the limits specified in Exhibit C, Table 1. Also, run continuing calibration verification, otherwise known as CCV, in accordance with TNI standard requirements. Acceptable performance of a CCV means percent recovery for all regulated analytes must be within the limits specified in Exhibit C, Table 1. And I am going to pull up Exhibit C, Table 1 now. And so this table should be familiar. The LCS limits have been there the whole time, and we're not changing any of the LCS limits. This is a little bit hard to read because we also are adding those trailing zeros to this. But essentially what's happening is adding the trailing zeros to the LCS limits so that now that must be within includes those trailing zeros. And then the new part is the ICV and CCV limits. They don't, for pesticides, it's going to be 70 to 130 for each analyte. That's the proposed change. And then for solvents, it will be 60 to 120 is the proposed change, which matches the LCS limits for solvents. The ICV, CCV limits for potency, proposed change is 90 to 110, again, matches the limits for LCS. For heavy metals, it's the proposed change is 90 to 110. And then for mycotoxins, same as pesticides, it's 70 to 130. And then we're also adding a requirement for water activity for 95 to 105. And I will say many of these limits came from an ACIL white paper or guidance document on cannabis testing. These were the limits that they had. And then with the acceptance of heavy metals came actually from EPA 200.8, which is a standard that many of our labs, our environmental labs use for water testing. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, all of them match those of the LCS recoveries, except for heavy metals. And just for consistency's sake, I'd like to suggest we make those match the 80 to 115 instead of 90 to 110. Again, just for consistency and clarity's sake.
Thanks. I will point out that the pesticides also don't necessarily match. They're a little tighter than the LCS limits. And part of the reason for that is because the LCS is done in a in-matrix material, so there may be some matrix effects where the ICV and CCV are essentially clean standards just done in solvent, so you would see less matrix effects. And also the ICV, the purpose of that is to prove that your calibration is in control when you first calibrate, that initial calibration verification. And then the continuing calibration verification is to prove that the calibration of the instrument continues to be within limits. But yes, I do hear your comments on that. We'll take that into consideration. Does anyone else have any comments on this? Justin, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just curious, just more of a curiosity, why some limits seem to be like plus or minus 30% and others are minus one, minus 40, but plus 120, why they're not the same on either end, if they're just out of curiosity.
So that is a good question. I do believe it has to do with the performance of those specific analytes. I may ask Steve Jetter to comment on this. These rules have been in place for quite some time. And he would know kind of more the background on those LCS limits.
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. Hey, everybody. This is Steve Jetter, for the record, with ORLAP. Yeah, the original LCS limits were partially based on either existing standard methods, EPA methods for the same analyte types using the same technologies like LC triple quad or GC triple quad or ICP-MS. For some of those, we pulled labs at the time. We had a bit of a work group and kind of determined some of our analytes that are maybe less frequently incorporated into standard methods outside of cannabis testing for which analytes had particular issues, particularly in these matrices. And for residual solvents, I think we sort of all of us know who have tried to analyze any of these analytes. They do tend to, especially the light end analytes, can be lost as part of handling of them, and so that's part of the reason why residual solvents, especially, has these broader limits at the lower end rather than at the higher end, because they do tend to have a lower recovery rather than a higher recovery. I think it's maybe worth comment from labs if those limits either could be tighter or for CCVs rather than an LCS, or if there are other considerations. I know that in some cases the laboratory information management systems, the LIMS, have a hard time with control limits that aren't equally spaced around the true value. So 70 to 130 plus or minus 30 works, but 60 to 120 doesn't work as easily within a LIMS. So if that's a consideration that we should have for these, please share those with us at this time. But that's kind of the basis for why these limits are the way they are right now. And I will say too, for heavy metals in particular, the difference between, a digested sample and a clean run CCV on an ICP-MS are pretty, there's quite a lot of difference that can occur there. And because metals are so stable, which is why the reason that we're looking for them, that's part of the reason why we have those limits that are more aligned with the EPA 200.8 ICP-MS method of plus or minus 10%.
Thanks, Steve. And I will say one of the reasons we're making this change is just to ensure labs are using the same limits in their methods and kind of moving labs into more of a performance-based method, ensuring the, and these are not new requirements for those who may not be as familiar with the lab testing world. The labs were always required to run an ICV and CCV. They were able to set their own limits, so we're just adding, making sure all labs are using the same limits for that. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I just wanted to say what Steve had mentioned. With our current LIMS right now, it is more difficult to flag a non-standard number around a CCV or an ICV. The blank spike, the matrix spike, that's easy to do, but CCVs and ICVs, not so much.
Yeah, and I believe all of, oh, I guess the ICV and CCV limits for solvents are not symmetrical. So that is something to take into consideration. Thanks for bringing that up. Okay. I'm going to move on unless anyone else has anything else to share on this. Okay, so as Margaret said yesterday, we're adding those trailing zeros throughout the documents, just to make those limits clear. This is a new section that's been added. I'm just going to read through it. So this is specific for marijuana or usable marijuana for potency. So the new rule says that the collected sample may be analyzed more than once by the same laboratory. Once the sample is tested by a laboratory for potency, the laboratory may not subcontract additional potency testing to another laboratory. All potency results obtained must be used to calculate a mean result of each adult use cannabinoid and CBD analyte. The laboratory must have a minimum of three potency test results to calculate a mean result, as the reported adult use cannabinoid and CBD results. If the laboratory determines a potency result is an outlier, the laboratory must have a documented scientific justification, such as a Grubbs outlier test for excluding the outlier result. The outlier result must be excluded for all potency analytes, not just the potency analytes that are determined to be outliers. And I will say before we get into comments, there is a section further down in the prohibited testing activities, which prohibits averaging of results for anything other than usable marijuana for potency. So while this section doesn't say that, we will cover it later. This is providing rules around when it's okay to average and how to average results. Okay, I'm not hearing anything. This is a fairly big change. So again, if you think of something later, please let us know. And I will say, go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, just one thing. It seems to say that if we had to do a retesting for a usable, we would automatically have to do three like a total of two retests, because we would need three to average to report the mean, essentially.
Yeah, that's what it's saying.
Okay.
Which I do welcome feedback on that. And I will say one of the there's in the SNFI, we did reference the New York quality manual for cannabis. And in their quality manual, they actually want all potency of marijuana, of usable marijuana, to be done in triplicate, and to ha report the average. And that was one of the references that we used to help write this rule.
And Melissa, just to clarify, maybe you can speak more to it. This is not necessarily just for retesting. This could be an initial test that's run as well.
Right. So I guess I'm not always clear on what the word retest means. So this would be like before the results are reported, not after. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, so I just wanted get some clarification because it doesn't sound like you're requiring it.
No.
But if we wanted to run a sample more than once to get a mean to result, we would have to run it at least three times. But
Yeah.
if we just suspected a wrong result and reran it once, got about the same, we go with the first one. We don't have to repeat report the mean at that point, right?
This is not saying that you do, no, but that is something we may consider. I think the idea is that any result that you test would be included, and you would want that third result just to kind of back up the result. Megan?
Hey, Megan with Pinnacle. Just to clarify, if the first test maybe was higher than expected and it fell outside our calibration range, would we have to do two additional tests or would just one suffice, doing like a new dilution factor to get it in the range?
I think if it's an error, then yeah, you would just follow your normal error processes. And I think we could write this rule more clearly. This is kind of a brand new rule. But yeah, if there's like, in my opinion, if there was an error, it was over the dilution range and then you just diluted it, that's not a situation where you'd have to average the results because that first result was not reportable. And I don't know if anybody like Steve or Sarah from the reference lab, if anyone else has any comments on this. Again, we are open to suggestions for this section as it is brand new. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I'm not sure specifically what I would recommend or put forward, but it is as written. It does seem a little unclear here, and there could be a lot of different room for different interpretation.
Okay, thank you. We'll look into making it more clear. We appreciate everyone's questions and feedback.
Hi, this is Steve Jetter with ORLAP. Yeah, I think these are all really good comments. And as Melissa said, this is kind of a sort of a complicated rule to try and write. So any suggestions for wording is always welcome in order to make this more understandable by everybody. And I think too, like to Megan's question, if a result has a clear problem associated with it, such as QC that's failing in the batch, or it's over dilution. That those kind of situations aren't really what this rule is intended to apply to. This rule is intended to apply to when there are no other reasons for a reanalysis, but something either doesn't seem right, or you just choose to run all of your initial analyses in duplicate or triplicate or whatever to determine an average. That's kind of the intent of these rules. So if there's a QC failure or something else that these rules aren't really intended to apply to it, and so we probably should make sure that that's clear in the wording.
Thanks, Steve. Yes, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you. I would say I know it comes down, it's probably going to be addressed later too, but it would be all right to run these multiple or these the reanalyzed samples on the same batch, right? If we just re-extracted them twice or three times or whatever, we could run them on the same batch, right? Because that I'm asking basically because it comes down to reporting the QC sheets later on and the later on in the rules. So I just want a little bit of clarification here.
Yeah, if they're all in the same batch, then that you just have to report from that one batch. But if, since samples are limited to 20 samples in a batch, there may be times when they might be spread out. And so we're asking if in those cases that all QC would be reported if it was on multiple batches.
Okay, cool.
All right. I do appreciate the feedback on this section. We will work on making this more clear. Go ahead, Chris.
I had one more point I wanted to make. It does seem like if you're retesting it for the reasons that this section is being added for, it would be nice to have some way of, let's say you got confirmation all the tests were approximately the same. It'd be nice to have a fallback. You can use the original test as run, because putting in averages into our limbs is the little that would require manual steps right now, whereas doing just a straight run can come straight from our limbs.
Okay.
Obviously, if there are differences from the first run and the reanalysis, then that makes a difference. But if we got confirmation that the original one was just about the same as all the others, then it'd be nice to be able to just report the.
Okay. And I do know, just for sharing, there are some error methods that require the samples to be run in triplicate and averaged. And so I do know there may be some ways that some limbs can handle this, because we have seen it in some of our other, an error in particular. But I think that is a good consideration to take in.
I just wanted to speak up from the OLCC side just to A, make really clear this is a may, not a must or a shall, so not a necessarily a requirement. But this kind of is coming from a place of we've had a lot of interest in ways to tackle the concern about a single result being your potency result. And I think a lot of different labs have tried to kind of tackle this in different ways through their own SOPs and their own internal testing process. And this is to try and provide a lot more guidance and clarity and hopefully kind of loosen up what is allowed here in the sense of that you it could be run multiple times and an average taken. And so that was kind of the thought taken here. So just want to make sure it's clicking with everybody what we're trying to do.
Thank you, David. All right. Okay, I'm going to move on, but again, if things come up or you think of something later, please let us know. Again, just changing shalls to must. Changing to the Commission seed to sale tracking system to CTS. This next section just adds a little bit of clarity. This is talking about a required limit of quantitation for potency analytes. And in the past, it said total delta 9 LOQ less than or equal to 0.15. We are adding that extra zero on the end, but LOQs of calculated values can be a little bit unclear, and I think what ORLAP has been seeing in labs and what we've been telling labs is that this really meant each delta 9 and THCA needed to be 0.150. So we're just clarifying that here to take away the confusion. And the total delta 9 needs to stay because that's written in other rules and other places, but this is what it meant the whole time, and I think this is what labs have been doing. So hopefully this isn't a big change. You're also welcome to have a lower LOQ. This is the maximum LOQ. Okay. This next one is just another clarification. It hasn't been in the rules before. But when you're performing any calculation, the laboratory must not round values during intermediate steps of the calculation. Rounding may only occur after all calculation steps have been completed. Go ahead, Patrick.
What about truncating the value? Just to kind of keep it a little short, we're not rounding anything, just kind of truncating that value at, let's say, like 5 decimal places or something like that.
I think that is something to consider. And I think some of the rules that I've seen on the EPA side say to go out to like 6 decimal places. That is something we could consider adding here because, sometimes these results are going to go out pretty long. So, yeah, I do well. That is something we could consider adding here.
Okay, I'd welcome that. Thank you.
So yeah, the EPA for drinking water has ha specifies these trailing zeros for things like arsenic and PFAS, and they also have the same rule for PFAS because PFAS also gets added together. It's kind of mimicking those rules there. Okay. This next section is kind of long. It's a brand new section. I do want to say it's not something that ORLAP just kind of made up. It's actually coming from, so the laboratories are required to follow the 2016 TNI standard. The TNI standard changes from time to time and it's undergoing a revision right now. And this is a new section in that revision. But we're probably not going to be using that revision for at least a few more years. But we thought what this section said was important, and we wanted to put this in the rules now. So it's mostly from that TNI draft standard, which is linked in the statement of need and fiscal impact, with just a few modifications that we made to make it specific to cannabis. And then this is also in the psilocybin section. So a laboratory is prohibited from the following actions during testing: fabricating, falsifying, or misrepresenting data, including but not limited to creating data for analysis that was not performed. Unwarranted manipulation of samples or analytical conditions, including unjustified dilution of samples or changing the instrument conditions for sample analysis from the conditions used for standard analysis. Unwarranted manipulation of software, including forcing calibration or QC data to meet acceptance criteria, removing software operational codes indicating analyst manipulation of results, changing parameters to avoid displaying appropriate qualifiers, inappropriately subtracting background, or improperly manipulating chromatographic baseline. Turning off or otherwise disabling electronic instrument and audit tracking functions. Misrepresenting or misreporting quality control samples, including representing spiked samples as being digested or extracted when a digestion or extraction was not performed. Substituting previously generated analysis for a non-compliance calibration or quality control analysis. Failing to prepare or analyze method blanks, matrix spikes, laboratory control samples in the same manner that samples are prepared or analyzed. inappropriately preparing or analyzing quality control samples, deleting or failing to record quality control data outside acceptance criteria to conceal the fact that the calibration or other quality control analysis was outside the acceptance criteria, performing improper manual integrations, concealing a known analytical or sample problem, removing failed quality control analysis from the record of an analytical sequence, excluding known quality control failures from the test report, observing out of compliance equipment conditions, then adjusting the equipment into compliance and recording only the compliant observation, performing repeated or additional testing for the purpose of achieving a preferred result or target potency result, performing repeated testing or additional testing and reporting the calculated mean results for any testing other than potency in usable marijuana, and performing repeated or additional testing for the purpose of preventing the sample from failing an action limit in accordance with OAR 333 Division 7. Then it lists the various sections that that would apply to. So, any comments on those? Go ahead, Patrick.
I did notice in sub G, small g, it mentions matrix spikes. I mean, it makes sense here, but it's just not mentioned anywhere else.
I did notice that as I was reading that too. It's kind of an optional thing for labs, so we could possibly remove that.
So I'll chime in here. This is Steve with ORLAB. I'll chime in here that little g, that rule doesn't require the use of matrix spikes, just saying that if they are prepared, they must be prepared in the same manner that samples prepared and analyzed. But it could be clearer, and we may need to actually look to see if it's defined.
Yeah, I don't think we use it anywhere else, really. Yeah. And the matrix spikes don't fail the batch. They're a sample-specific control that helps you determine if there was matrix interference in a sample. Go ahead, Justin.
I was just curious in section there in small case p where it says performing repeated testing and additional testing and reporting the calculated mean results for any testing other than potency and usable marijuana.
Yeah.
But don't we have to report the mean for concentrates, primary and duplicate? So would there need a little more clarification there or?
Well, those are technically different samples. This is like on the same sample, so we could add that on the same sample.
Okay,
But
gotcha.
yeah. But thank you. Yeah, I yeah, that is that could be more clear. Thank you. Did you want to go again, Justin, or? Anyone else? All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. So again, we just have a shall to a must, and that is the end of section of 333-064-100, which is our longest section. So moving along here. We're getting into now 333-064-0110, which is reporting cannabis test results. We have just some clarification on language. A laboratory must ensure that all test reports clearly just kind of reworded, didn't change the meaning there, just made it the rewording clearer. This one here, so it says section D here, identification of the test as a compliance test or a quality control or research and development test. If the test is for compliance and meets Oregon compliance test standards in Division 7 and these rules, the report must on the first page state this test report meets Oregon compliance testing standards. And it used to say it had to say it was an R&D or quality control report if it wasn't a compliance test. We're kind of flipping that and now saying, like, if it is compliance, it needs to say it's a compliance using these exact words on the first page. Okay. And then this is just a clarification, didn't change anything, but if applicable, the test report must state that the test was done on the sample from remediated. That hasn't changed. These next ones was one of the things Patrick brought up earlier. So for potency, that was tested multiple times on usable marijuana. All test results and batch quality control results must be listed on the report. The reported potency results for each analyte must be the calculated mean of all analysis. So this is saying that if you do choose to run that multiple times, we do want to see every result and the mean and any quality control. So if it was ran on separate batches, you'd have to include all the quality control there. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, just touching on this again. I know we have to report the QC samples, but you were saying we have to report all results as well as the mean. So essentially, like if it were one result and we did the three, so we'd essentially have four reports coming out, one with the average and then one of each result.
This would it would I it would be on the same report. So it's one
Okay,
report.
yeah, so it's just gonna be a massive report.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Anyone else? And then this one is saying if you're doing testing that requires a primary duplicate or replicate, you need to have the average result of those on the report as well. And not just the individual. So you have to do the math on the report. And I will say for this one here, this really only applies to the five accredited analytes. So I know some labs are running a lot more analyte, so it wouldn't be for anything other than THC, THCA, CBD, CBDA, and Delta 8. I don't know if that helps with that report. Go ahead, Chris. Oh, Chris, are you? Go ahead. Can you hear me, Chris?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. For the G section, is that just applicable for potency, or is that, because it doesn't specify on the G section, is that for all tests?
So this is referring to Division 7, and I don't have all of these memorized, but I think it's pretty much any test that requires primary duplicate and replicate, which is mostly potency and solvents, I believe, would be the only ones. But someone from OMMP or OLCC can help me out if I'm wrong there.
I believe that is correct for just I think it's just potency and solvents that require RPD, RSD.
And so then H says, in addition to the average, it's also going to be the RPD or RSD as well. So we just want all that information, all that math done on the report.
Sorry, I was having a little technical difficulty. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be for potency and solvents. I heard that part. So that means we need the average result for the solvents on the report.
I'm gonna have to double check that. Margaret or David, do you remember? Go ahead, Patrick.
As it currently stands, we don't do the average for that, and I think it doesn't require that because it says if required. So that's
Okay.
just my
All right.
And I do want to point out there's a typo in a reference to an AOAR in G. It's the second one. It says 333-007-0140. That should probably be 0410.
Thank you. And then, David, do you know if average of solvents is needed? It may not be.
No.
Okay. Yes. So then this is just for potency. Thank you for that. Okay. And then identification of any failed test on the first page of the test report. Go ahead, Mia.
Mia Nelson of Capricorn. I'm not sure what the intent of this is, but my fear is that I don't want any failed test results that eventually are sort of mooted or overruled by later testing to wind up on the front page of the report. And the reason is just that we have found that sometimes dispensaries, kind of alert on, oh, wow, failed test report or failed test symbol and don't take it any farther, and they just don't want to buy that product. And sometimes there's failures that are remediated or wind up being errors. So I would hope that this is only tests that are substantiated to be failed to the point where, that matters to this product can't be sold or can't be used for certain things.
So in the scenario where products are remediated and or go through reanalysis, there's always going to be a new COA that's issued, or in rare situations, an amended COA when there's been some sort of error found. And so I think in all of those, there wouldn't be the failure. However, the failed test is still tracked and metric and is still required
I
by
know.
OHA to be make sure that other companies are aware that of that testing.
Yeah, I know that. It's just I like I said, I don't know what the intent was here, but I just don't want the big failed on prominently on the front page if it turns out that that actually isn't in play for the product being able to be sold.
The intent is to make it really readable so that if there is a failure and the product shouldn't be sold, that it's on
Right.
the first page. Because we would hate we've had companies who've had a failed product and have had a concern have had, remarked, I didn't know because it's buried 13 pages back or something like that, and they just didn't read
Right.
it, didn't understand it. At least that's what was articulated to us. Whether that's true or not, hard to say, but the more readable and clear the COAs are, I think the better it is for business. That's at
Do
least our intent.
That's good to hear. Do you think you could reward this in the rule here to make it clear that it's the only failures that are going to be reported prominently on the front page are the ones that actually are, active failures that will impact the legal selling of the product?
But that is because
Not
the
like
report
the
issued is for the test results you have. If you get a new test result that shows a pass, you get a new report. And the new reports don't show old testing on
I
it.
see. So that will never, that sort of old history that's no longer relevant wouldn't show up on this
It
report.
shouldn't be attached to the new report because there's been some sort of new testing event. And so that would issue a new certificate of analysis.
Thank you for that clarification. Makes me feel better.
Chris, go ahead.
Yes, this is really more about impact. I totally understand the reasoning for this and, largely agree with it, but with our current LIMS provider, a complicated change to a C of A might be at the mercy of their change process. So I'm not sure how quickly that could happen, something like this. Not even sure if this would qualify for something like that, but just something to be aware of.
Okay, thank you. And yeah, this could be something that maybe labs need more time to redesign their reports. And if you do have the time to look into that and provide us feedback over the next couple of weeks, that might be helpful as well. Okay. So again, we're still on test reports and things that need to be on them. If applicable for cannabinoid products, the target potency, serving sizes and unit of sale, density or mass or volume of intended serving sizes and unit of sale as provided to the laboratory. Yes, Patrick.
For the target potency, if it's provided, could it be something as simple as being in the name of the product or something like that? Or will it have to be like a new field, essentially?
So it is in Margaret's rules yesterday, it is being added as one of the things I believe that they have to tell you in advance. As far as how that is on the report, I'm not sure if this is specifically saying like where it has to show up. So the lab, we can talk about that or think about that more. It's just saying right here that it has to be on the report.
Just somewhere.
Yeah.
One concern I have with the name approach, because I don't hate that. My concern is frequently cannabis items have ratios in their name, and only one of those may be a target, and the other one may not. They may not want to set fail criteria for the 4-to-1 for CBD or something, and they only care about the one part for the THC. And so the name may be unclear to us as regulators of which one had the target. We're both targets with fail criteria on the bottom end, and that so that may be that's my worry with just read the name approach.
Okay, cool. We'll try and explore other options.
Okay, and then section K, test results and quality control results in a form containing the same or more significant figures as each action level. That's defined in Division 7 and Exhibit C. So Margaret went over those changes yesterday, and then we went over the changes. It's still only the LCS and method blank that need to be on the report. Unless there was a failure for ICV or CCV, but this is just saying you have to match those significant figures. And then quantitative quality control results in percent recovery. So do it again, doing the math for folks. And yeah, these are some fairly significant changes to the report. So we do recognize that May January 1st might be a little too quick for these. So that's feedback we appreciate. We could always kick these deadlines back a little bit. Again, just changing shalls to must. And then here, this is a new one as well. The laboratory must have a written procedure for amending test reports when an error is discovered. Prior to issuing the amended report, the laboratory must supply to the authority or the commission a letter from the laboratory's technical manager or designee confirming the laboratory mistake or error and agreeing to the invalidation request. Sample identification, date and time of sampling event, date and time of receipt by the lab, date and time of analysis for the samples in question. Complete description of the error alleged to have invalidated results. Any observations noted by laboratory personnel when receiving and analyzing samples in question, a corrective action plan that contains a cause analysis of the laboratory accident or error, the corrective actions that will take place, and the dates the problems will be corrected, and an amended test report that clearly identifies the report as an amended report on the first page as required in the 2016 TNI standard. So, this is basically asking the lab to provide a full description of what happened and kind of a data packet to the OLCC, or if it's for medical marijuana, to the marijuana program to help them identify what happened and kind of to quick move things along a little quicker. Go ahead, Patrick.
And just to clarify, would that be sent to basically David over at the lab side, or
Yeah, that
okay?
has not changed. It always said to the to either authority for medical marijuana or commission for recreational marijuana.
Cool.
They are free to, consult with the reference lab or OR lab. We don't make decisions on that, but we might provide technical consulting on those. Justin?
Yeah, I'm presuming this is only this all the written letter and everything is only if results need to be amended. Say, for instance, we had a clerical error and we just had to update the sample name or something. We would this is not applying to that, correct?
Think the way that it, think if it's a clerical error, David, I don't know, this is for things that are going to be changing in metric, right? The results in metric.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to figure out a good definition of clear, because I think I can think of really good examples of one or the other, but where the line is in between them is a little tricky. So that, yeah, I think like certainly changing a name of a strain is not something I need a data packet for. But like we issued a COA that said it failed and we meant to write pass. While you may have typed the wrong thing, that feels like a much larger, I'm going to have a lot more questions about what happened.
Yeah, so if for some reason results that have been entered need to be altered, that makes sense. But say for instance, yeah, like I said, like the name of the sample, we were like, oh, we entered an S instead of a Z because it was Skittles or something like that, you know, or they noticed that, hey, you were off one digit on the batch metric number. Can you correct that? Would that, those are ones we could just go ahead and reissue without this whole data packet letter.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe we can make that more clear because I was kind of envisioning this as like when something in metric needs to be changed in order to like, for that portion of it. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, this question is kind of along the same lines, but like a combination of those two instances, one obviously clerical and the other not. Say, for example, the client gives us the wrong unit of sale, and because of that, we fail it. Everything about our report was correct except for the wrong information given to us by a client. I'm not asking for a resolution of this sort of situation now, just wanting to bring it up as a possibility.
Thanks. Steve?
Thanks. This is Steve Jetter with ORLAP. Another point here is that the TNI standard requires anytime a lab amends a report in any way, then there are certain processes that need to be followed. And so I think it's going to be important for labs to understand that if you're amending a report for a typo, then you have to follow the requirements in the TNI standards. But we need to make it a little bit clearer, I think, in this part, when sort of this data packet is being requested.
Part of the reasoning behind some of this is I obviously get these requests a lot, and frequently it involves many emails back and forth with the initial reach out being very vague and cryptic from the lab of just like something happened and nothing's clear. There's no could you explain why? Could you like what have you guys done to look into this? Like what the and so it uses a lot of agency time to have to kind of investigate what happened. And if some of that could be done up front to be more clear to me what has happened, what's going on, what the issue is in a more complete way, I think we could address these much quicker.
All right. Thanks for the comments on that. Anybody else before we move on? Okay. So again, just next one, changing commission seed to sale to CDS. These are kind of just adding that 0 to the 100. And then before this said analytical uncertainty, we're just making it clear that meant measurement uncertainty. And then must, shall to must. So those are just all editorial changes there. It doesn't change the meaning of any of it really. Um, And that is the end of the reporting section. Any comments before we move on? I believe this next section is the last section for cannabis. We'll probably take a short break after that and then get into the statement of need for cannabis. And this next section, there's really not a lot of changes. 333-064-0120. This is proficiency testing for laboratories accredited to cannabis. So, as I mentioned before, the definition of proficiency testing is changing, but in that definition, it did say ORLAP approved. And so ORLAP will have those PT providers be sure that they can still meet the requirements in this section. So I know all the labs are familiar with the method codes and the analyte codes. Those are not going away. Those 17043 PT providers are going to have to submit to us evidence that they can use those. And we've talked to some of them and they've told us that they can. So we're going to set up a, it'll probably be on our website of like, these are the PT providers that we've approved that are going to use these method codes and analyte codes. So I want to be clear, none of that is changing. And most of the section, pretty much none of this PT section is changing. So still going to have, you know, the PTRL proficiency testing reporting limits and still going to require the PT provider to send the reports to us with those Excel spreadsheets. So I didn't say that before, but I just wanted to make that clear. And so the only section in here that's changing is just a little clarification. This was in the section B here, incorrectly used to say that with the PT, you had to submit your ORLAP ID, but that was actually not correct. The number that the labs are using is actually an EPA ID that's listed in ORLAP data input and edit database. And all the labs are using the EPA ID. Again, it's an ORLAP assigned EPA ID for most labs, but that's just to make it clear because there is a separate ORLAP ID, but that's not what we're using. So that's been in there for a while, incorrect, and we're correcting that. But yeah, so nothing else in here is really changing. During the last rule change in 2024, we made some fairly big changes to the section. We're not making changes again, so things will be consistent. Again, not getting rid of that in-state usable marijuana for pesticides, mycotoxins, and potency. Just getting rid of that date here because we're now in 2026, so we can get rid of that 2024 date. Again, everything's staying the same with PTs, except for that we'll have hopefully some more PT providers, but they will have to be approved by ORLAP. Same things with the 7 months, 7 days, none of that is changing. Okay. And that is it for cannabis. We got to the end of the cannabis section, so thank you, everyone. Any last minute calls for comments on that before we take a break and then get into the statement of need and fiscal impact? Okay, well, I really appreciate everyone's participation today. Let's take a 10-minute break and come back at 3 o'clock, and we'll get into the statement of need and fiscal impact. So I'm going to go off camera now. We'll see everybody back in about 10 minutes. Thank you.
All right. Hello, everyone. It's a little after, it's 3 o'clock exactly. We'll give folks maybe a minute or two before we dive back into this. Okay. Yeah, thanks for coming back and thanks for all the work we've done today. I know this is a long meeting. After this portion, the meeting is going to switch to psilocybin. So some of you may not be as interested in that section. You're welcome to stay, but of course I understand if you want to go for that section as well. So we're going to do the cannabis, then go back to the rules for psilocybin, and then come back to the statement of need and fiscal impact for psilocybin. Hopefully get through it all today, but if not, we'll have to finish up on Friday. All right, before I get started, I'm just going to make a little statement about what the statement of need and fiscal impact is. So the Rules Advisory Committee must provide recommendations on fiscal impact statements, including advice on mitigating the cost of compliance for small businesses, and provide recommendations on the racial equity statement, including recommendations related to reducing the impact on affected communities. Recommendations for the timeframe of implementation should also be provided. For the racial equity impact statement, we need to consider which populations are affected or most harmed from a racial equity perspective, in what specific ways are specific communities affected by this rule. Communities could include people who receive agency services, communities, partners, providers, and other interested parties, people from a range of racial, ethnic, cultures, and linguistic backgrounds, people of varying genders, gender identities, and sexual orientations, people with disabilities, people of varying social classes, people representing different geographic areas of Oregon, people of multiple generations, people representing small business interests. So that's what we're going to go over today, and we welcome all feedback on this. It's an important part of the process. If you do have additional comments on the statement of need and fiscal impact or racial equity statements, please send them to either myself or Margaret by August 31st. As a reminder, public comment will open after the rules are filed and will be announced on the program's websites for both ORLAP and OMMP. Again, the ORLAP website is healthoregon.org/ORLAP, which is ORELAP. That will be the time to submit written comment to the agency, or if you prefer, there will also be a time for verbal comment at a public hearing, which I believe is scheduled for October 19th. All right, so hopefully everyone is back. And Margaret started us off on this yesterday. It is the same document that we looked at yesterday. I do believe she had one change for Division 7 that she added today. Margaret, do you want to start with that change?
Sure, Melissa, I can do that. Looks like you're almost to that section. So,
Here.
right there. Yeah. And so the language that was added to the statement of need for Division 7 has to do with section 333-007-0430. It's the standard compliance testing for adult use cannabinoid products, or not products, not just cannabinoids, potency. And we're adding in that statement to clarify the language that was inadvertently removed that said that both the sample, the primary and the duplicate have to meet concentration limits. And so we're just adding a that into the statement of need because a justification or the need for that rule was not included in the prior version we reviewed. So that's what's been added here. I don't think I need to read it. I think everyone can see it on the screen. But if anybody has any questions or comments on it, welcome to state those now.
Hey, Margaret. We didn't actually see the. Were you thinking you were sharing the screen? Because it
Oh,
wasn't, or.
I thought Melissa was is. Can I only see Melissa's screen right now?
I'm not seeing shared screen. Are other people?
I can see a shared screen, and there's two paragraphs. The first starts with "although research," and the second starts with "adding language."
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Sorry, I see it now too.
Okay. I was worried there for a moment. I was like, how can I only see this? Yeah, so we're talking about the second paragraph that's on the screen that starts with adding language to clarify. So I'll just read it just in case people are not able to see it. Adding language to clarify that if any individual sample increment exceeds the maximum concentration limits allowed under OLCC rules, the product fails for potency. This clarifying language has been inadvertently removed, or this clarifying language was inadvertently removed during a previous rule change. Restoring it adopts or supports public health and safety by ensuring cannabinoid products remain within allowable concentration limits and by confirming that a product fails if even one tested sample exceeds the limit, even when the average of the two samples is within compliance. This update also resolves prior inconsistencies in how laboratories determine concentration limit failures, promoting clarity and more consistency or more consistent application of the rule. And I see, Chris, you have your hand raised.
Yes, I just wanted to comment. I appreciate this being added. It felt a little bit like a slight mischaracterization yesterday. For us who work within the rules, if we go looking for guidance in the rules and we see something missing, or see something not there, I generally assume that it's a pointed omission, not an accidental omission, because we go through things like this rack and we do a lot of work to, you guys do a lot of work to put the language in these rules. So, when we find something missing, we presume it's on purpose. So unless we are told otherwise, that's the way we look at it. I'm assuming that other people look at it the same way. So I do appreciate this comment being put in there. Thank you.
Thank you for that. All right. Well, thank you, Margaret. Appreciate that pointing out and adding this here. We'll move on to the Division 64 changes. And so, starting here, so one proposed change broadens the options for proficiency testing to allow the 17043 providers who are approved by ORLAP. This change hopefully increases PT provider choice and is equivalent to PT requirements in other states where cannabis is regulated. Other changes are put in place to improve measurement accuracy and precision of potency and contaminants. This including updating the definition of homogenization and adding a 1.0 millimeter particle size for homogenized usable marijuana. This change will ensure better sample uniformity for more precise and accurate results. Additionally, the definition and calculation for total potential psilocin will be changed to total psilocybin equivalent. Other changes will be implemented to strengthen analytical method validity and quality control. One of these changes is adding quality control acceptance criteria to initial calibration verification and continuing calibration verification to the acceptance limits in Exhibit C, Table 1 under Division 64. And we're also going to be adding this to Exhibit D, Table 1 for psilocybin. Additionally, water activity will be added to the list for quality control limits for ICV and CCV.
That was not in tape exhibit C in the past. Another change to improve analytical quality control is placing criteria around the characterization of laboratory control samples for potency testing, and adding the change of adding trailing zeros to limits will be used to ensure significant figures are expressed consistently. Okay. Other proposed changes will enhance data integrity, transparency, and standardized data handling. These changes include adding a requirement that rounding may only occur at the end of calculations, stating that averaging of results is only allowed for potency and usable marijuana, and setting criteria for that averaging, adding a list of prohibited laboratory activities, adding information that must be listed on test reports, and adding steps laboratories must follow if an error is discovered after reporting. This is kind of just a summary of what we talked about today. And then we have a lot of different references here that were used in making these rules. And so here we have the racial equity statement. As I mentioned yesterday, the psilocybin was not part of this. I did add it. And we also heard the comment for addressing the land stewards. I think we need a little more time to work on adding that. So that has not yet been added in here. We're considering how we can add that. But I'll go through it again here for what we have today. The rulemaking is being done in collaboration between Medical Marijuana Program and Oregon Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program, or ORLAP. Both programs are part of the Oregon Health Authority Public Health Division. This equity impact statement addresses both the testing standards being updated by OMMP and the enhanced operation process for laboratories being implemented by ORLAP. The proposed amendments primarily modernize and clarify cannabis and psilocybin testing rules and also reduce regulatory barriers and improve consistency and product safety standards. They indirectly advance equity by improving clarity, reducing compliance burdens, strengthen product safety within Oregon's cannabis and psilocybin regulatory system. Clarify testing thresholds for contaminants and potency, improve consumer safety and transparency across all communities, while also reducing administrative and financial burdens for smaller businesses. Clearer testing thresholds ensure safer and accurately labeled products across all communities, helping to reduce disparities in exposure to unregulated or lower quality cannabis products. These benefits will have a greater impact on vulnerable populations, like those who are enrolled in the medical marijuana program, who use cannabis to help with debilitating health conditions, or those who access services through Oregon Psilocybin Services licensed businesses. Any feedback or comments on that?
I don't know how to do the electronic raise of hand, so
Oh, go ahead.
I raised my hand.
Yes, please.
I was looking in the system the whole time. Okay, so first I want to say that I appreciate all of the work that has been going into protecting consumer safety, while also introducing models that I think other states should follow by really seeing what it looks like to provide equity for those of us who have been here before the beginning of time. So, something that I wanted to just bring to your attention and my concern today is just about like unintended consequences. So, as an Indigenous practitioner and as someone who works at the intersection of culture, public health, healing systems, there's obviously a lot of rules, right? And the intention of those rules are to protect the consumer. What I find is that there isn't how some of these rules lean so much to the analytical side that it makes it hard for those of us who might cultivate our medicine by using marine materials, shell products, fish products, things that might have mercury in it, right? So if our medicine tests at a higher percentage and we fail when it is our medicine first, this is where the frustration comes up in our community. As we sit in these meetings, we have to hear our medicine be talked about as numbers, as letters, and not referred to as the indigenous name, right? So for psilocybin, Los Niños Santos. So I wonder what it looks like for Oregon to show other states how to honor indigenous communities by actually seeking guidance and advisory from organizations that are directly connected to the leadership of the indigenous tribes in the areas that we're speaking of.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that feedback. And I don't think it's a question we can answer right now here in this meeting, but it's definitely welcome feedback and something that I think we can all work on understanding and better collaborating on this. Appreciate that. Thank you. Yes, Dan.
Just really quick on that, what she was just talking about. I feel if you guys want New Mexico, I feel has done a fairly decent job in writing in things like this. They should be somebody to maybe look towards the New Mexico psilocybin program. If you guys need contacts, let me know. I have them all.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you. I appreciate those feedback. And we will take those into consideration and look into how we can strengthen this part of our sections. Okay. Any other comments before we move on? All right. So Margaret went over fiscal impact to Division 7 yesterday. We'll pick up here for Division 64. So for Division 64, which is for will primarily be experienced by cannabis and psilocybin testing laboratories, members of the public and other entities may also experience fiscal and economic impact if the cost of items tested by labs increases in response to the rule changes. Specifically going into the details for adding additional ORLAP approved ISO IEC 17043 PT providers. If the laboratory chooses to use one of these PT providers, the cost of those PTs may be greater than the cost of current TNI approved PT providers. However, this is an option, so laboratories may still opt to use current TNI approved PT providers and are not required to use the new options for PTs. A small fiscal impact may be felt by laboratories for the compliance requirement to do a one-time validation of homogenization procedures for usable marijuana, as the laboratories may need to purchase a 1 millimeter sieve to perform the validation or purchase additional homogenization equipment to meet the new requirements. Yes, Patrick.
I just want to say that the fiscal impact for adjusting our homogenization to 1 millimeter for all things, including stems, is probably being a bit understated because it's not just a one-time thing. We do have to validate it, like you're saying, but it's a continual, constant thing that we need to basically ensure this small particle size, regardless if it's 1 millimeter or 5 millimeters. So just throwing that out there, it's definitely not a small fiscal impact. I would say that's being massively understated.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? All right, thank you for that, Patrick. A fiscal impact may be felt by laboratories by adding acceptance criteria for initial calibration verification and continuing calibration verification to test methods if the laboratories must update their methods to meet the requirements or perform additional calibration, troubleshooting, or testing for analytical batches that do not have acceptable ICV or CCV results. They also may have increased costs for performing new required steps for characterizing laboratory control samples for potency testing. This part is for psilocybin, but as we already covered the definition, I'll talk about it here now. So there may be some fiscal impact to update their processes for the total potential solution and change to total psilocybin equivalent. We'll go into that more when we get into those rules. Adding trailing zeros to the criteria limits, updating test reports. It does sound like we may need to push that deadline back to have labs meet all these requirements. And additional administrative and quality assurance steps to implement if an error is discovered after reporting. Does anyone have anything to add to that, or again, on the timeline section for any of this? Yes, Patrick.
I know some others from the lab community have expressed need for maybe a little bit longer time. I'm just kind of here to agree with that. I mean, if need be, we can do it by January 1st, but it might be a little bit tight. If we could just get a little bit more breathing room, just to ensure that we're in compliance and everything as soon as the rules come about.
Okay, yeah, I think we've heard that, and I think that's something we'll definitely consider. And this is specific for the reporting, for the test reports, is that right? Or are there any other things that you're concerned about the January 1st timeline?
I think mainly just for reporting, like you're saying, unless anybody has any other things, but from Chem History's end, just the reporting.
Go ahead, Steve. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks, Melissa and Patrick. Yeah, I think in order. As Melissa's mentioned, like this rulemaking is tied to rulemaking in Oregon Psilocybin Services, and also with OMMP, and we do need to kind of be conscious of what timeline we're looking at. And so I think in general, our goal for these rules to become effective is January 1st, 2027. But for specific components of it, we can put in those the dates when those rules will take effect. So. At this point, or here in the fiscal impact statement, if labs and other members of the RAC can be specific about the portions of the proposed rule changes that they need additional time on, that will be helpful for us to know when to build that in.
Thanks, Steve. And yeah, and if you want to put it in writing to us too about specific concerns. One thing that came up when we were going through this is for psilocybin, that total potential psilocin is an accredited analyte. So labs will have to update to total psilocybin equivalent. We already have submitted a method code request with TNI LAMS. I think we did that about a month ago. We haven't gotten the confirmation for that yet, or sorry, an analyte code. But hopefully that we never really know how long that takes, but hopefully we'll get that soon. So that should be available for labs to apply for soon. But that's another consideration that I haven't heard yet. I know we haven't gotten to that section, but just want to point that out. Go ahead, Jesse.
Yeah, I realize I'm going out of sequence here, but I just want to bookmark this. Another relatively minor impact, which we did reflect on the SNFFI that was shared with our RAC earlier this summer. There's going to be new values on product labels, and that will be an impact for psilocybin manufacturers.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up. Anyone else? Oh, Dan, go ahead.
Yes, please bookmark. I do want to talk about this new accreditation that we're going to have to apply for later. Please, thank you.
Yeah. And it's not a new accreditation, it's just adding an
Well,
analyte, replacing the analytes. So making sure that,
yeah,
yeah.
it comes down to just a math formula, though, basically, right?
It does, but that we can wait for
All right,
psilocybin, but
thank
this
you.
was an accredited analyte, so that's yeah. Okay. Yeah. Margaret, go ahead.
Yeah, so I just wanted to add one more
thing to throw out there. When we talk about pushing back timelines for specific sections, for example, like updating test reports, it'd be good to include like what that time frame is. Are you asking for additional like 3 months? Are you thinking it might take 6 months? Are you thinking, and I think not just 6 months from, today, but I think an actual date, like would March 1st work for everyone? Is that too soon? So to be specific in a date would be super helpful. Otherwise, we're kind of just guessing as to when might be enough, and we don't want to overestimate because we don't want to have to delay these unnecessarily as well. So I don't know if we want to start with a date. If you want to, if maybe Melissa, you have an idea of what something like that could take, and then if RAC members could respond.
Yeah, I think I was thinking March 1st or June 1st. I don't, it's been a while since I was in the lab, and so I'm a little disconnected from how long these changes would take. So I would welcome the feedback from the lab folks. Patrick.
Yeah, from our end, I think March 1st is reasonable. That should give us plenty of time to roll out different iterations and try a few things out before then. But I can't really speak for any of the other labs. I know we're using different LIT systems.
Thanks. Dan?
March 1st should be plenty. We're actually in the process of changing limbs right now, and hopefully, I mean, we should be with our new limbs before January, but yes, March would be great.
Okay. Justin?
Yeah, I'd probably second that. March seems like it's pretty reasonable on our end as well.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing that up, Margaret. Anybody else? Okay. We'll take that March 1st into consideration for the reporting. It sounds, I don't want to make any promises, but I think that sounds reasonable to me. But we'll look into it. Again, I know that changing reports can be time consuming. All right. So yeah, as Margaret said, overall proposed amendments should be relatively low cost, economically efficient, and supportive of industry and consumer protection. These changes produce quantifiable cost savings, minimize unnecessary product loss, and strengthen testing accuracy with minimal regulatory burden. For impact on state agencies, this amendment does not introduce new state-level responsibilities, fees, or enforcement. I would say, with the exception, and I'll probably add this, that ORLAP will have to implement that PT approval process. But besides that, existing compliance and oversight structure are sufficient to implement rule changes and should result in a negligible fiscal impact on Oregon Health Authority, OLCC, or other state partners. It sounds like there might be some minor changes to metric as well that we discovered during this RAC. As far as cost of compliance on small businesses, this is the same summary as yesterday about the number of licensees. And then down here, we're talking about, there could be some in administrative activities. For reanalysis, for missing target potency, but yeah, as Margaret said, reduce waste, more reliable labeling, lower risk of market disruptions, minimal added cost for action limits with trailing zero. And again, as we all talked about, the certificate of analysis updates will have some time, there will be some time put into that by the labs. And then, yeah, so Patrick brought up that laboratories for the homogenization that may incur costs for equipment, supplies, labor, or increased administration to be in compliance with the proposed rules for Division 64. Anything to add here? We're getting pretty close to the end for cannabis section. Okay. So yes, today again, we thank you for being part of our Rules Advisory Committee. This is how we are one of the ways we're involving small businesses in the development of the rules. So we are thankful to have some OLCC processors, wholesalers, laboratories, members of the Cannabis Industry Alliance of Oregon, as well as we invited two Oregon Psilocybin Services licensees. And thank you for the feedback on that and participation in that, as well as OMMP patients and public members. With that kind of concludes what we have for cannabis. And again, you're always welcome to reach out to Margaret or myself if I know sometimes we don't think of things till later. So we'll welcome feedback on that. And again, everyone's welcome to stay, and we welcome your feedback as members of the public for psilocybin services. But we also understand if you want to sign off here for as we are concluding the cannabis section. So, last call for comments on cannabis. Okay. Thank you, everyone. I'm going to get back into Division 64. And this section will be a little bit shorter. There's a lot of the changes are the same as what we just went over. So hopefully we'll start here with 333-064-0140, psilocybin product sampling procedures and testing. Oh, and I missed changing revision to rev to revision there. We'll change that. But no real changes here for sampling except for the shalls to musts. And then same thing for LCS limits. We're changing it used to say regulated analytes are within the limits. Now it says must be within the limits. And we'll go over Exhibit D, Table 1 here in a moment. Similar to cannabis, we're also adding initial calibration verification and continuing calibration verification limits to psilocybin. And I'll open up that table now. We have a lot less analytes here. And we did make the ICV, CCV, and LCS limits all the same for these for the four accredited analytes with adding those trailing zeros. Any comments on that? Okay, I'm going to go back now. Again, just changing shalls to must. We changed a should here to must, so there's no moisture adjusting for psilocybin. And then these are going to be the exact same rules that we had for cannabis about performing calculations. Not rounding any values before intermediate steps. Rounding may occur only after calculation steps have been completed. And then we went ahead and put the exact same prohibited activities here as well. So again, fabricating, falsifying, misrepresenting data, including creating data for an analysis that was not performed, unwarranted manipulation of samples or analytical conditions, including unjustified dilutions of samples, or changing the instrument conditions for sample analysis from conditions used for standards, unwarranted manipulation of software, including forcing calibration or QC data to meet acceptance criteria, removing software operational codes, indicating analyst manipulation of results, changing parameters to avoid displaying appropriate qualifiers, inappropriately subtracting background, or improperly manipulating chromatographic baselines. Turning off or otherwise disabling electronic instrument audit tracking functions, misrepresenting or misreporting quality control samples, including representing spiked samples as digested or extracted when a digestion or extraction was not performed. substituting previously generated analysis for a non-compliance calibration or quality control analysis, failing to prepare or analyze method blanks, matrix spikes, laboratory control samples in the same manner that samples are prepared or analyzed, inappropriately preparing and analyzing quality control samples, deleting or failing to record quality control data outside acceptance criteria to conceal the fact that calibration or other quality control analysis were outside acceptance criteria, performing improper manual integrations, concealing a known analytical or sample problem, removing failed quality control analysis from the record of an analytical sequence, excluding known quality control failures from a test report, observing out of compliance equipment conditions, then adjusting the equipment into compliance and recording only the compliant observation, performing repeated or additional testing for the purpose of achieving a preferred result, performing repeated or additional testing to prevent the sample from failing for an action limit. So the same for cannabis, just made specific for psilocybin. Any comments on that or anything that anyone wants to add or bring up? Okay. So that is the end of that section. And then we get into reporting psilocybin product test results, which is 333-064-0150. And again, we just kind of have this section two here is being clarified that the laboratory must ensure the test report clearly identifies. Oh, go ahead, Jesse.
Oh, sorry to interrupt your flow. There's just a minor typo in two. It should be must ensure that test reports clearly identify.
Okay. Thank you. We'll fix that. All right. And then there's not as many changes here as there were for cannabis. So, again, just a shall to must. And we defined the term product tracking system. I'm not sure if that wasn't defined before, it was just PTS before. And then correcting an amended report, psilocybin services. You're going to, if you want to, if you discover an error that has occurred after reporting a result to the manufacturer or into the product tracking system, the amended report must be generated and communicated to the manufacturer. Again, must enter in. And this was changed from within 48 hours to by basically noon the following day of discovering the error. So that timeline was tightened up a little bit.
And if I may, that's for consistency with OPS rules. We require all inventory to be reconciled by 11:59 the next day.
Thank you for that.
And thank you for the edit.
Okay. So this is kind of the big change for psilocybin services. We've already talked about it a little bit. So we're changing from potential psilocin to psilocybin equivalent. The calculation is changing, as was also mentioned in the definition section. So total psilocybin equivalent will be 1.4 milligrams per gram psilocin plus milligram per gram psilocybin analyte. And this was done in collaboration with Oregon Psilocybin Services, and there was a work group held on this change earlier this year. So this will change the way that the labs report that. Any comments on that, Dan? This could be the time to bring up the analyte, the accreditation for this.
Sure. I mean, so is this going to require a new on-site and all this other stuff, or is this just basically okay, you guys did it and here
No new
you can do the
on-site.
math. Okay.
Yeah, just proving you can do the math.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That should be not too big of a deal then.
Okay.
However long it takes, I guess. So
Yeah.
yeah, good.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, this is Steve with ORLAP. Thanks, Melissa. Yeah, Dan, so it will require an application to to add the additional analyte, but an on-site won't be needed because it's adding, it's essentially adding an analyte to an existing method for you.
And it's going to be a wash in my fee, right? Yeah.
Well, there will be a $200 application fee unless you're able to add it during a renewal, in which there won't be any fee associated with it. I'd have to look at the timing for renewal.
If we could, I'd like to try to save $200.
Yeah, and we should hopefully be getting that analyte code soon. We can follow up with TNI labs, but we did submit that, I believe, in July. So that should be available for labs soon. Any other comments on this? Okay. Again, just kind of more changing shalls to must here. We do want to see if there's any analytes associated with quality control results outside of the acceptance limits, then that should be on the report. And this is method blank, laboratory control sample, ICV and CCV. And again, these are already required in the TNI to have this on the report. And in fact, the ICV is failing. The sample should not be reported at all unless there's no more sample left. But if in that case, we'd want to see that on the report, and those are already requirements in the TNI standard. And then quantitative quality control results and percent recovery. So matching what's in the chemist in the cannabis side. And then this here is same thing, just adding those trailing zeros, clarifying that analytical uncertainty meant analytical measurement uncertainty. And that is it. That is all the changes for psilocybin. So, any questions or any comments before we go back to the statement of need and fiscal impact?
This is more of a comment than a question, and it's just for the awareness of anyone who might be listening. OPS and ORLAP have been working together on this concept, although we're sequenced slightly differently. OPS has been about a month ahead. We had our RACs last month, and I just wanted to let everyone know that revised draft rules on the OPS side will be published for public comment on September 1st, if anyone is interested in following that.
Thank you, Jesse. Okay, well, we'll go back to the statement of need and fiscal impact. I'm not sure I'm going to read back through everything, but I'll just give folks a chance to put their input in specific to psilocybin services products. If there's anything anybody wants to add here that we didn't cover already or that you think is important to be included in this document, we'd appreciate hearing from you now. All right. Well, if there are no further comments, we'll prepare to end the session today. It sounds like we won't need to have the meeting on Friday, so I will cancel those Zoom meeting invites. Again, I really do appreciate the feedback, the participation that we had today. We will take everyone's comments into advice and work on these drafts and publish them when they're ready for public comment. And there will be a public hearing as well in October. And as we've said, if you think of something, please email us, Margaret or myself, by August 31st. That will be the best way for us to potentially take those into consideration for the draft before it goes on to public hearing. But then there is still time for public comment. And yes, I really appreciate everyone's time today, and I appreciate you all being here, being part of this process. And I hope everyone, has a great evening.
Thanks all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.